Welcome to the All Around Joe podcast, where we optimize your human performance from my personal experience as an athlete, coach, and all-around self-improvement junkie. On this edition of the All Around Joe podcast, I am talking with Matt Walrath of Beyond Macros. Now, Matt is a super interesting guy that has an incredible story. And not only that, he has an incredible company, Beyond Macros, that not only talks about nutrition, but they get deep into habits and how you can change and how you can be effective in your life. So there's so much in this interview that is incredibly interesting for people that have their nutrition, everything figured out, and people that don't have it figured out. I mean, it's a full spectrum of improvement that you will get from listening to this podcast. And I just want to let you know this podcast is brought to you by the Get Better Project, which is my other company, my other podcast and whatnot. And the Get Better Project is here to bring you programming. So if you're looking for a program to follow, whether it be in the gym, body weight, or a kettlebell program, head over to the Get Project, thegetbetterproject.com, and see what they have to offer. So I think that there's some pretty cool stuff because I'm the one that's programming it. So thegetbetterproject.com is who's bringing you the goods on this particular podcast. Now, without further ado, I want to jump right into this with Matt and, let you guys get to know him a little bit better as I have. All right, here we go. Matt, welcome to the show today.
Thanks for having me, Joe. Looks like you have a great backdrop there that I'm jealous of.
Oh, yeah. Out here in the campground today. I have never actually done a podcast outside. So the girlfriend's in the van getting her work done. And a lot of times we're like crammed in there side by side. No big deal. But I looked outside and it was beautiful. So got all these leaves on the ground and trees. And actually the sun is shining because it's been snowing where we're at recently. So,
oh, yeah.
The Smoky Mountains and whatnot.
Yeah.
We woke up in a Walmart parking lot the other day to some snow.
Oh, beautiful. Nothing like a nice dusting of snow in a beautiful Walmart parking lot.
Yep. With big rig engines on all around you. It's beautiful. Right.
Nature of van life, right?
Yep. It's awesome. Yeah. It's awesome. So let's dig in a little bit here because I know that you have some fun stuff to share about your life as well. First off, let's start with like, where are you from? How'd you grow up? You know, how did that kind of bring you along your path of life to where you are today?
Yeah, man. So I'm from New Jersey originally, from a pretty small town, relatively wealthy and conservative. And, you know, I definitely grew up around a lot of people who were always projecting strength. And for me, I thought that, you know, the problems that I had were not relevant because, you know, I was always meant to feel like, you know, you're from a place of privilege. So, you know, your problems are small. And so I always kept them bottled up inside. And, you know, that really caused a lot of issues for me growing up, you know, not feeling like anybody else felt the way I did and keeping those emotions bottled up. And then, you know, long story short, I ended up moving to California after my freshman year of college, after just like wearing this mask my entire life. I was able to just take it off for the first time. And I ended up I took a class on Eastern philosophies of health and healing. And I was really able to finally just like get in touch with myself and start being the architect of my own life. I think having bottled up those emotions for so long and not really having the tools to be able to express them is really the reason that I've been on this kind of deep inner work path and really exploring the self journey.
Interesting. So how would you explain the Matt prior and then the Matt now? Like what would, if I met you then, what would I get?
Oh, you'd have got somebody who is just mirroring a very, I would say, immature sense of masculinity. So somebody who was, the old Matt was definitely somebody who was always trying to project strength and show that I was the alpha in some way. And it came from a place of insecurity. And, you know, versus me now, I'm definitely someone who's going to sit back and listen and try to try to help people more than try to, you know, put them down and show that I'm above them in some way. It's that did not feel natural to me, but it just was the thing that I saw all around me, and just that's what I went into.
And was it immediate when you took this class that you had a switch, or was there some specific thing or topic, or what was it?
Yeah, honestly, the switch happened for me when I was still in high school. You know, I was really dealing with a lot of depression at the time, and my mom had picked up on that, you know, as mothers do. And she was the first person who actually let me know that, you know, she really struggled in high school and she really felt the way that I did a lot of times. And even as an adult, you know, she didn't feel like she fit in with the other moms in town because, you know, she didn't grow up wealthy and, you know, they did and they were cliquey and she just wanted to, you know, be a loving mom to her family. And, you know, she really shared those things with me and made me realize that I wasn't alone in feeling the way that I did. And that was really the thing that started triggering me feeling connected and feeling like, you know, I actually had other people that felt the way that I did. And that really, I think, started me on the journey. Because before that, I didn't really feel like life was worth living. I was smoking so much weed, like an ungodly amount, getting so drunk 3 days, 4 days per week. And, you know, I was just a reckless high school student. And after that, really started, I was able to clear the haze of all the things I was doing to just, you know, numb wearing the mask.
Yeah. Why did you decide California?
Because it was very far away from where I grew up. And because, you know, there's just that allure to California. When you grew up on the East Coast, you're like, oh man, you know, the beaches of Orange County, the women, the, you know, I can get out there, I can surf, I can climb, the weather's going to be amazing. It was just one of those things that had a strong allure. And then when I went out and visited the school I ultimately ended up at in Orange County, I was like, wow, this is amazing. I need to go here.
Very cool. Yeah. I had a experience where semi-similar where I went down to California. I'm from Seattle and I went to San Diego State for school. So
yeah,
same kind of thought processes, like why I want to get to California.
Yeah.
But I'd like to dig in a little bit more. So like people that don't necessarily know you right now, you're pretty super athlete and you've done a lot with CrossFit. I want to know, like, did you play sports growing up and what was that like? Because to me, when I think of someone that is athletic and fit, they usually, the sports have, you know, helped their mind out as well. It sounds like you kept that bottled up until you got to a certain place in your life. And then it let's say, opened up for you. So
yeah.
I'd love to know more about that, like the athletic side, and then we'll get into the nutrition side after that.
Sweet. Yeah. So I played lacrosse growing up. I was obsessed. I was playing fall ball. I was playing indoor lacrosse in the winter and I was playing lacrosse in the spring. Like once I found that it was my sport, it's the only sport that I played year round. And I always just wanted to play in college, play professionally. And I played in college. And the thing is, in high school, as I mentioned, you know, that was the one thing where I knew if I had good grades and I knew if I was doing well in lacrosse, then, you know, that's all I needed to do to make it seem like I was okay on the inside. And I really did put a lot of focus in there. And I really, truly did want to play in college. And actually, around the time that my mom noticed that like depth of depression for me was when I had been told by a few Division I programs that I was looking at that I was too small and that they weren't going to end up taking me. So then all of a sudden my dream of being a Division I lacrosse player was crushed. And I was now looking at the Division III schools that were recruiting me at the time. And I ended up going to a Division III school in New Jersey, Stevens Institute of Technology. And I'm so glad for that opportunity because although I ultimately ended up transferring because it was not the experience that I wanted, I was able to meet this guy, Matt Altauser, who he had, he had the Vince Lombardi trophy at our school renamed for him. So for people who don't know Vince Lombardi, he's the guy who says that the only place that success comes before work is in the alphabet. That guy, you know, they named that award for this guy because he was such a model of hard work. He had come into that lacrosse program as a walk-on, actually from Seattle, where lacrosse wasn't very big at the time. He was just pretty much a practice dummy. He was the guy that they'd throw out there just to, you know, get hit. And he put in every single day as much time outside of practice as everybody else put inside of practice. Because he figured, if everybody is practicing for 2 hours a day and I'm so far behind them, I need at least 2 hours per day outside of practice just to catch up. And the crazy thing is that with his work ethic, he was able to be one of the best players in the nation his senior year, ended up as an All-American, captain of the team, like insane progress. And he came in during our alumni game. And afterwards, he, you know, as the, before they were going to rename the trophy for him, he gave us this speech about how he's like, man, luck is something that was on my side. And the way that I see luck is that it's where your hard work meets opportunity. And he told us a story about all that hard work that he had put in. And then that one opportunity that he got his junior year where they were just crushing a team and they threw him in. They were like, okay, you know, we'll throw this scrub in. And he went in and he executed. And they're like, oh, wow. And then the next time he got the opportunity, he went in and he executed. And, you know, from his junior year, he started to actually build up a reputation as a player that they could trust. And so he worked his way up the ranks. And, you know, by the time he was a senior, it was like, holy crap, this guy's an all-star. And I was like, whoa, I want to be like this guy. And up until that point in my life, if anyone's ever read Mindset, I was a total fixed mindset person. I was the type of person who thought you either had it or you don't. You know, you either have the talent or you don't. And that's one of the reasons I was so crushed by having these Division I teams be like, you're too small. You don't have it. I was like, ah, so I'll never have it. And then that was finally the point where I was like, oh my gosh, I can make it for myself. And, at, you know, this was in the fall of my freshman year. I was like, that's when I really started realizing, okay, you know, I can build the life that I want. So ultimately, I did.
Man, that's so interesting. So interesting. Did you get to meet this guy and actually, you know, talk with him a lot? And did he mentor you at all? Or was it literally like you were hearing him speak and it was like,
it just happened? It was literally just hearing him speak. Like after that, I was like, I'm going to do the same thing. Like I'm not starting from a total scrub. I'm, you know, one of the better recruits, but I'm going to show up every day to practice my ass off. And I'm going to be the guy who has, you know, that Jerry Seinfeld streak of we had to sign in anytime we were doing wall ball where we were going and hitting the gym. And I was like, I am going to be there every day. There is going to be no mistake that I'm working harder than everybody on this team.
Interesting. So I'm seeing this theme come out with you that I'd like to dig into, that you're able to make these changes in your life once you see the light.
Yeah, big time.
How do you do that? Because I think a lot of people have trouble making change, you know, and I'm a big fan of Tony Robbins, and he says that, you know, change happens in an instant, but you have to decide to make that change. And then once it does, then you're just like down that path.
Yeah.
I think that for a lot of people, that's really hard. And as someone myself that wants to help people as much as possible and help them make those changes, how have you done that? Can you conceptualize how that happens?
Yeah, absolutely. So thinking about as if you had something that was restraining all of this water and all of this pressure is starting to build up. And all of a sudden, one little hole breaks in that retaining wall that's holding back this massive wall of water. And, you know, all of this tension wanted to be relieved. And you give it that path of least resistance and it's just going to come flowing out super fast. And that's really what happened for me is, with my mom showing me that, I wanted life to be worth living. I wanted to know that other people felt the way that I did. And when I finally had that opportunity, you know, I was no longer stuck in my own sorrow, feeling bad for myself. I was like, oh my God, okay, finally, this is what I really, truly wanted. And I was able to make changes in my life accordingly. And then same thing for when I'm hearing this story about, like, you put in the hard work. When the opportunity's there, you'll be able to capitalize on it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is what I wanted. Before I was told I don't have it and I'm not big enough and I never will be good enough and I never will be big enough. And all of a sudden I'm being told I can be. It's on me and the responsibility is on me, which is a scary thing. It was really scary for me at the time to realize, holy crap, it was like the end of my childhood. Because I was like, no longer is the responsibility for my outcomes in my life on my parents or my coaches or anybody else. Like the responsibility lies on me. But I wanted that. So that's why I was able to make those changes. It ultimately is what I wanted, but hadn't seen yet. It was just that light being shown on what I needed to see in order to make the change.
So do you think that the guy sitting next to you in that room listening to that speech that didn't make the change just didn't want it?
I think so. I think it wasn't enough of a pain point, enough of that pressure building up in their life where when it was being shown, they just weren't ready for it. It's like I reread books because oftentimes I wasn't ready for some of the messages in the book 10 years ago. But now I'm like, oh, I'll reread my favorite book from 10 years ago because now where I'm at in my life, I'm going to pick up something completely different. The book's different. Even though it's the same set of words, the energy of the book is completely different because the way that I'm perceiving it's different.
I completely agree. I do exactly the same thing. And pretty soon I'm going to have this set of books that all I have time for is rereading the same books over and over each year.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, man, I need to put that one on the shelf for next year and then reread it again. I probably have like 5 books like that right now that just continue reading over and over again. Cause I feel exactly the same way. You're a different person. Oh man. So I reread or listen to Tony Robbins' Time of Your Life, the 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss. Let's see, Think and Grow Rich, and How to Influence, is it?
How to Win Friends and Influence
People. Friends and Influence People. Yep. So yeah. I guess that's 4 of them. I think those are the ones that are like the hallmarks for sure that I'm like, all right, if I'm in a certain space during the year, boom, you know, I go to that one. Or if I'm in a, you know, different time of year, boom, I go to that one. So
nice.
Yeah. Love them. Do you have any like that you could share since we're on the topic?
Oh man. There's a book called The More Beautiful Question that I really love because it gets you thinking about questions. And I think as a coach, as a business owner, as just a person who's introspective, being able to form a really good line of questioning and question everything can be a really great way to grow your business or to uncover opportunities for growth in your clients or to uncover opportunities of growth for yourself or even uncover things that are kind of in your blind spot by asking questions to finally shine a light on it. So that's one of the books where I think, you know, I could reread that many, many times. But interestingly, this year, 2018, and I'm going to continue it into 2019 because of how effective it's been, is any nonfiction book that I read, I immediately reread it. And I mostly consume via audiobook. So I'll usually read something and then listen to it on like 2x speed, where if I notice that there were like questions at the end of a chapter or things for reflection, then I'll press pause and I'll actually go through and write them out. But I like to get the overall feel of it the first time, take some notes, get an outline, and then go through it again and fill in the gaps. It's been really helpful.
That's super cool. I'm an audiobooker as well, and I have a similar practice to that. I hadn't thought about doing it the second time in faster speed, though, so that would be cool.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. I like it. I'm going to try that. So we've been talking for, gosh, a few minutes now, and we haven't even gotten to nutrition yet. And you're like, you have this super cool company called Beyond Macros, and nobody has heard about it in us talking yet. So let's start getting into this nutrition stuff because, you know, this podcast may go way too long now that we're getting into nutrition. But I love nutrition. I'd love to hear when that started coming into your life. Was that, you know, growing up with your parents, they started teaching you about it and then you got down that path, or was it college, or when did it start getting in there?
Yeah, so I've actually been thinking about this a lot, and usually the story for my coaching begins at my first CrossFit level one. Okay. But for me personally, with my journey, I actually had a lot of food allergies growing up as a kid. And my mom recognized it and she played detective, and through process of elimination, we were able to figure out which foods and food additives caused issues with me. And so I always had to watch what I ate growing up. Now, saying that, I was eating things because I was small. So, you know, I was always being told you got to get bigger. And my mom, who's awesome, she was like, okay, you know, if you eat more, you'll get bigger. So I was eating like big salad bowls of tortellini, just piled with cheese, pints of Ben and Jerry's ice cream. I would have Snickers bar with a jar of peanut butter in my locker at school so I could use the Snickers bar to, you know, scoop out peanut butter and just crank the calories in. So I really, you know, I pretty much had this oversight of I need to watch out for my allergies. And I was like, yeah, I got to bulk. So I was always looking up things on like bodybuilding forums about what to eat to get big. So, you know, that's really where my self-interest in it began. And, you know, the path didn't start out so hot. But once I did my first CrossFit level one in 2010, and there was just that 15-minute zone diet lecture that they give. I think Jason Kalipa actually gave it at my first level one. That opened my eyes. I was like, holy crap. Like there's those things on the side of a nutrition label, protein, fat, and carb. Like that's a thing. Like you can balance those. You have to pay attention to that. I always just thought like eat a bunch of food. And then I see all these level one seminar staff people eating paleo at lunch and I'm talking to them about it. And I'm just like, whoa, this is just mind blowing. Like quality of food, like measuring the quantity instead of just being like more gain, less lose. I was like, this is insane. This is a rabbit hole I want to go down. And that really kickstarted it for me. I you know, immediately went out and picked up the Zone Diet book. And I think about a year and a half after that, while I was in my senior year of college, I ended up doing Precision Nutrition's level one because I was just like, I hate everything I'm learning in my nutrition classes in college. And I was like, there's got to be a better way. You know, I've had my eyes opened to these other things like paleo and zone. I'm being taught the food pyramid and that milk is the best thing in the world for you. And, you know, I was like, there's got to be a different way. And I asked around, heard about Precision Nutrition, started doing the level one actually during probably one of the worst nutrition classes I ever took in college. And it was so funny to see the difference between like how objective Precision Nutrition was and how dogmatic this nutrition class was. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be fun.
Oh, that's so funny that you mentioned that because like I have a kinesiology degree with emphasis in fitness, nutrition, and health from San Diego State.
Yeah.
And I took all of the classes. For some reason, they wouldn't let me double major in nutrition and kinesiology. There was just some weird rule about it. Yeah. But I went and took all the classes anyway. And I'm with you. I'm like, I would have arguments with the teachers. I'm like, this stuff doesn't work. Yeah. You know, at the time I was way into bodybuilding and stuff, and bodybuilders are on the front line. They're, you know, injecting themselves with things and trying all kinds of stuff that I would never condone doing. But, you know, you're testing, what does a protein do? What does a carb do? What does a fat do? And then they go and tell you all this crazy stuff, like you mentioned, you know, with milk. And I had a professor one time tell me that pizza was the perfect food.
Yeah.
Because it had protein, fats, and carbohydrates in it. And I was like, huh, I don't know about that. So it's pretty interesting to hear. And I hope we could go back now and there would be a little bit of a different discussion, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But dude, the funny thing about the pizza is that there's this study that showed the title was so funny. Like the actual study itself doesn't matter, but it was like a mixed macronutrient meal leads to what, you know, whatever postprandial glycogen repletion, whatever it happened to be. I think it was a nutrient timing study, and the mixed macronutrient meal was pizza.
Oh man. Yeah. That's amazing. I mean, the funding that people get for some of these things, I don't even understand it, but you know, maybe we should be looking into that. I don't should do a research study.
Yeah.
So like, what was the next step for you? Like, how did that go from, all right, I'm interested. I know that college classes are not doing it for me. I took precision nutrition courses. And then did you decide I want to start coaching people in this? And as well as, you know, tell us a little bit about your CrossFit. I know that you've been successful with CrossFit as well. So how did CrossFit and nutrition kind of go along that lines and coaching and all that fun stuff?
Yeah. So after I graduated college with a business major, I thought, okay, you know, I just went to college for this. I should probably use it, and ended up starting a marketing agency. And after about 18 months of that, I realized, you know, this is not what I'm passionate about. And it was the CrossFit and the nutrition that I was spending all of my time thinking about, researching, doing. And I was like, all right, you know, I gotta leave this marketing world, handing out like chintzy little items at you know, events, helping Thule give out more Thule hats that are going to end up in a landfill. I was like, this is a net negative effect on the world. So I was like, all right, I'm going to leave this company. And it was kind of scary because I started it with some friends, and to let them know that I was no longer going to be a part of it was a difficult conversation in my head. And then when it happened, they were so supportive. They're like, oh, we know who you are. They're like, that's way more you. Thank God. And so I ended up I was living in LA at the time and walked into Paradiso CrossFit and was like, hey, you know, I just left my job and I'd love to figure out how to just start coaching here. And, you know, I was lifting there as a member at the time and like, all right, you know, we'll come and shadow some classes and, you know, we'll see what we can do with you. So I ended up coaching CrossFit to make ends meet at the time and was also given the opportunity to run some nutrition challenges at the gym, given my background, and really help them create the nutrition resources for their members. And that was where the nutrition thing really started growing. I was like, I love movement and I love, you know, coaching classes and coaching people on movement. But what really got me going was the nutrition. So I was like, that's the rabbit hole I'm going to go down and, you know, really just put all my energy there. Started taking on clients, started doing, you know, 6-week group programs, things of that nature, and just grew from there.
Very cool. And was that Beyond Macros, or when did Beyond Macros come into the play?
Beyond Macros came into play in 2016. So I was, up until that point, I think still refining what I was doing. It wasn't until about 2015 that I started getting consistent results with people. Mm-hmm. And after a year of people getting great results and people noticing it, especially at Paradiso CrossFit, because that's where a lot of my clients were, they were like, oh, whoa, like, you know, look at Joe over there. He went from, you know, just looking like typical dad bod to shredded. You know, how did he do it? And so the word started getting around and it got to the point where like, I just couldn't even handle my own client load. And at that point, somebody was like, oh, you should like hire an assistant, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, I'll start thinking about this. And eventually I realized like, why don't I just hire and train other coaches? And ultimately I did that. And that's how Beyond Macro started.
That's very cool. So how do you explain Beyond Macros to people?
We are the sustainable transformation nutrition coaches. We're really focused on that sustainability piece.
Cool. And what happens if somebody comes to beyondmacros.com and they start going down the rabbit hole?
Yeah. So usually most people find us because they're looking for calories and macros for CrossFit or something along that, or a macro coach. And I think a lot of people come in thinking it's going to be if it fits your macros and just, you know, eat whatever. The macros are the most important thing. And then eventually they realize that we're all about using macros as the guide to shifting your eating habits. Because ultimately, to create a sustainable change, you need to take what's normal for you now and create a new normal set of habits. And that's really where we put the focus. And, you know, I think people start to realize as they interact with us that, you know, things are a little bit different. Our coaches, like I mentioned with that questioning, our coaches are going to really take the time to get to know every client. And we're not just trying to like churn out as many clients and success stories as we can. Like I've seen a lot of fly by night coaches who just starve people so that they can get a great leaning out transformation thing. That's not us. You know, we'd much rather have somebody go from very overweight to a healthy weight, not necessarily abs, and then be able to maintain that healthy level of weight with a set of habits that feels natural and easy to stick to.
Sure, sure. Yeah. And what are your nutrition philosophies at this point?
Yeah, so it's interesting because like there's no one, like I couldn't say, oh yeah, we're paleo or if it fits your macros or something like that. Like ultimately for any individual, we're going to figure out the right starting point in terms of the quantity of food they need to eat, because quantity is the way that you shift body composition and quantity is the way that you make sure that you're fueling yourself for performance. So if we get the quantity right initially, that's where our client's going to be like, I see the change. I feel the change. I'm ready for whatever you have to offer me next, coach. And that's when we can really start to actually go deeper with them. Maybe not even nutrition at that point. We can start looking at, okay, like what's going on with your sleep? Are you training properly? Like, what's your stress management like? You know, I think a lot of functional medicine, functional nutrition now is all about stress reduction, but I like to think about it in terms of stress management, because you want to reduce the stress that you don't need in your life and you can control. But the thing is, like, there's stressors that you can't control, and you need to be resilient and able to manage those things. And I think that's where inner work practices come in. And I think that's a really important thing that we help our clients form, is some time, carve out some time for some inner work.
Okay, so we're talking about nutrition, we're talking about macros. The company's even called Beyond Macros, but what I'm hearing is that there's some serious, like, coaching going on here as far as, like, whole life, which is cool, and which is what I believe as well. You know, it's like people come to you for a specific thing, and it may be nutrition, it may be CrossFit, it may be whatever. But once you start to dig in, it has nothing to do with those things. It has to do, usually at least, it usually has to do with something that else that's going on in their life that either they needed to learn about or they just needed to get over. But so when somebody goes down that path with you, like, how did you get to the point where you're like, all right, you know, it's not just about the nutrition, it's about these other things? Because I think a lot of people put it into a little box, but it's super cool to hear that you've opened that box.
Yeah, I think it gets put into a box because that's what's easy to sell. I think people don't necessarily value their nutrition because they've seen, like, oh, I can buy a meal plan for $50 from some random person on Instagram, or, you know, I can get a meal plan template from, like, a big company for $110, or, you know, people don't really put a value on nutrition. They think it's just like a set of numbers. I think that that's really an issue, because if you want coaching and you want somebody who's actually going to help you change your life, then that actually requires a little bit of an investment. Now, the thing is, I've seen a lot of people who say that they provide coaching, but really what they provide is a template or a meal plan. And the coaching is really training people how to fit that box, because it's a lot easier to be like, just hit your numbers. And that's what matters. And there's a few auxiliary things that we'll talk about, but won't focus on. And the thing is, I don't think that that is the way to create a sustainable change. I really believe that we're creatures of habit. So we got to change our habits. Otherwise, we're going to slide back into old habits as soon as the finish line is reached with a diet. And we're also a product of our environment. So if we don't change the environment that caused us to be the way we are right now and to have the habits we have right now, then as soon as the finish line is reached and the diet is over, then that environment is going to turn you right back into the creature that you were before. And, you know, we got to make the right choice, the easy choice. And the way to do that is to really make that lifestyle shift. And I really believe that requires coaching, personalized, truly, truly personalized coaching.
Hey guys, Joe here. I just want to take a quick break in the action to tell you about something really cool that I've been working on. It is programming that I am writing for you. It's over at thegetbetterproject.com. So if you head over to thegetbetterproject.com, you can sign up for programming that includes stuff that you could do with all of the equipment. So in the gym, in your garage gym, or, you know, if you're hauling around 400 pounds in a van like I am, you could do that programming. And I also have a body weight version, all right? So it's the same style of programming, but it's done if you don't have any equipment available to you. So you could do it in your living room or whatever you may have available to you. And I'm also going to be writing a kettlebell version, because a lot of times it's really easy to just throw a kettlebell in your car or have a kettlebell rather than having all that equipment. And you can get great workouts with 1 to 2 kettlebells. I usually program them for just having one, because I usually have one. So I'm trying to let you guys know what I am doing to stay in awesome shape with just having a kettlebell. So head over to thegetbetterproject.com and you will find a way to sign up for the programming. It's daily Monday through Saturday programming. We usually take Sunday off, even though I only recommend that you're doing, you know, 5 days a week maximum. So I program for every day just in case you didn't have the ability to get one of the days in and you didn't want to go back and look at it. So I'm trying to take care of all of that for you. There's videos for each of the programs so that you can see what the movement should look like. I'm trying to make it as comprehensive as possible for you. And if you sign up, you will also be able to interact with me personally on the private Facebook group. So head over to thegetbetterproject.com and I would love to start programming for you today.
Wow. There's a lot we could go into here with the whole environmental change thing and how to do that in all different parts of your life, which I think is super cool. And I've actually talked to a lot of people about nutrition, and I don't think that's come up one time, but it makes so much sense. You know, if you're hanging around in a room with a lot of people that are doing things that are in line with the goals that you want to reach, how much easier is that? Like, if you're the one sitting around eating, you know, drinking milk and eating pizza and have no idea what you're doing, and then you sit next to a bunch of your friends, they're going to be like, whoa, I feel like I'm out of place. And then the conversation is going to be different, and, you know, the actions are going to be different. It's so interesting. And I would say that, well, you tell me, is that the hardest part, changing the people's environment?
Big time. Yeah. Big time. Yeah. Because the thing is, it's like, we can't get someone to change their entire environment. You know, we can't change everything about their external world. We have to help them identify the things that they're willing to change, really. Like, you know, I had one client who, for the most part, he had control over his environment most days of the week, because he would go into work and, you know, when he was at work, it's like he could just only bring in what he prepped for himself and just focus on only eating that, and just, you know, close his office door and, you know, not be exposed to all the donuts people were bringing in for birthdays. And so he was able to and willing to change his office environment so that he wasn't falling victim to, you know, all of the baked goods that were being brought in for celebrations, which seemed to happen every day. Now, the interesting thing is the few days that he worked from home were the days that were the most difficult for him to control his environment, because it wasn't up to him, because he had a wife and kids. And so there were all of these junk foods that his wife wanted to be able to feed the kids so they could have like a normal childhood in the house that were really difficult for him. And she didn't want to cook food just for him and then cook something different for the family. So it was one of those things where he had to decide, am I willing to shake things up in my relationship, which when I looked at it from the big picture would have a more negative impact on his overall health than, you know, being a control freak. You know, he had to make that decision. And the thing is, that's a non-negotiable. It's like, you know, he definitely needed to have that conversation with his wife that, you know, he was going to change some things up about the way that he behaved, but he wasn't going to be able to completely change up his family culture just because he was focusing on this. So it's interesting, because there's a lot of things where there's so much friction. It's not something where he could just be like, listen, wife, you need to stop cooking food that our kids like and cook kale salads and chicken breasts for me. You know, not that I'm recommending that for people, but, you know, that's something that over time has to be changed. You can't just in an instant change that part of your environment. So that's why it's so difficult, is because, you know, it starts with a conversation. It starts with changing your own actions, but it's not going to change overnight, which is the really difficult part about the environment. There's some things that are just boom, in an instant, you can make the change. You can engineer your environment. And then there's other things where it's really just, you know, you got to be persistent and you got to know what your non-negotiables are, and you got to know what you might actually have some control over and where you can have some success.
This is super cool stuff. How did you get to the point of going from being in the box to learning about the coaching side of it and basically changing people's psychology and environments and things like that? What was the training for that?
I think a lot of it came from my own experiences, certainly, because I started getting into nutrition early. Man, I got into nutrition when I was in college. So I think to my junior year of college, when I lived in a house with five of my best friends as a junior in college, man, we were partying all the time and it was all around me. But like, I wanted to be a high level athlete and I wanted to do well, like work out and eat well and all these things. And it was definitely one of those things where I had to figure out what the non-negotiables were. For me, it was a non-negotiable. I wasn't going to be 100% party pooper all the time. Like, I was going to engage in libations. But for me, what I was able to do was, I would get us all together for a family style dinner some night where, you know, I would show them how to like cook some better foods, and I would like cook some food for all of us. And, you know, we really all got into this habit of, mostly during the week, like preparing good foods. in the house. And we would still go out, you know, Taco Tuesday, all this type of stuff. And, you know, we would still definitely engage in some less than healthy choices. But that was one of the first times where I was able to positively impact my environment. And, you know, it's not something that I knew in the moment, like, okay, yeah, like anytime I'm working with someone on nutrition, like the environment's the thing. But when I reflect on it, it's like, man, that's one of the most important things. And as people started to ask me, as I became more experienced with my nutrition coaching, like, oh, what books should I read about nutrition? The answers were often not nutrition books. Anything that's got the diet in the title is going to be dogmatic. It's going to be some charlatan hawking their thing, you know, trying to get you to feel like theirs is the be all end all. And for me, some of the most influential books I've read for nutrition are The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, are The Willpower Instinct by Dr. Kelly McGonigal. And even Mindset by Carol Dweck is an amazing one, just because, you know, getting people to realize that they need to have a growth mindset about things is important. I try to get all my coaches to read that book because, you know, it's definitely an important one. I really believe that the nutrition is the easy part. You know, I talk about it in terms of, like, if we're talking about a nutrition journey, if I give you your calories and macros, I gave you the map. You haven't taken a single step on the journey yet. You could still, like, get sidetracked. You could still run into a pack of panthers who want to take you off your path. You could still, you know, there's so many things that can go wrong along the way. You know, and that's where I really realized that, you know, it's not just about these tiny little reductionist things that we've been shown to believe, or there's no silver bullet.
How do you change a habit?
Depends on the person, to be honest, and it depends on the habit. So if we're talking about a really simple habit, for example, then you can really just be like, okay, first things first, like give me a habit that you would think about changing for a client or for you, and we'll just workshop that.
Let's see. Drinking a Coke in the morning.
Okay. So first thing first is we got to identify what the craving is. Like, Joe, do you drink a Coke in the morning because it helps you wake up?
Absolutely.
Okay. And do you enjoy the taste of it? Is it the actual taste of the Coke, or is it the fact that it gets you up?
I like the taste of it.
Okay.
And it gets me up, you know. I like them both.
Okay. Have you had any mornings where you haven't had access to a Coke and you've had something that gets you up?
You know, I have had to have coffee before, but yuck.
Yeah. Okay. So do you feel like that carbonation adds a nice little added benefit to you?
Oh, yeah. When my Coke's flat, it's no good.
Okay. Cool. So, you know, taking a step out of that role play, like, we've identified that, you know, you're doing this because it's something that gets you up. It's definitely something that has a reward baked into it. Like, you woke up, Joe, and, like, you know, you got to treat yourself. And then we've also realized that there's a little bit of this sparkly, you know, carbonated thing that you enjoy about it. So then if we want to change the habit, we need to make sure that we hit the things that are the reason that you're drinking the Coke. Because we just completely remove that, like, you can't drink Coke in the morning, Joe, then you're going to be like, ah, fuck that. You're going to toss the baby out with the bathwater and you're going to fire me. So what we need to do is we need to find something that's going to get you up in the morning, feel like a reward, be carbonated, but not have the negative impact of 50 grams of sugar per 12 ounces. So one thing that we might do is be like, okay, the trigger is you wake up, the craving is that you need something to get you up that's carbonated, you know, so we need to put in a new behavior. And so the new behavior that we want to put into place is probably something like, you know, Joe, maybe we want to get you a soda stream and start having you do a non-sugar sweetened version of a carbonated beverage that, you know, has some caffeine in it. You know, we're going to figure out what that is. And, you know, we might start doing some research to figure out what something is that's not going to have as much of a damaging effect, but still is going to be something that you'll do regularly. And eventually we can maybe even start shifting that and find something that's a little bit more productive. But in the meantime, we want to find what that next step is. So, you know, we'll start doing some research. We'll put that new behavior in, and then hopefully it's something you enjoy enough that it itself is the reward. And that's kind of the habit cycle that Charles Duhigg talks about. Now that's a simple habit. That's something really easy. When I think about like bigger habit changes, I think about there's kind of three ways that you can approach it. And one is to put it in terms of exercise. So one is kind of like the endurance model. It's like the low and slow. It's, you know, the thing that you're just sticking to for a long time. It's like, okay, we've got maybe an easy habit and we need you every single day to work on changing that behavior. So over time, you know, the behavior change sets in. Now, the other model would be kind of like the high intensity interval training model of behavior change. Well, it's called the intermittent one. And this is the one where you're like, okay, I have a behavior that I really want to change, but in my stressed out state right now with work crazy, there's no way it could happen. But I'm about to go on vacation for the next 2 weeks. And then, you know, work's going to be pretty calm for 2 weeks after that. So I got a month where I can focus. So we get you really intensively focusing on one or two behaviors that you want to change during that time. You know, that's the be all end all. That's what you put all your focus into. Everything supports that. And then when you're done, just like, you know, being in a cycling class, in a spinning class, it's like, okay, you're still pedaling in the rest intervals. So you're still finding like the nugget of those changes you made that can keep you coasting until the next opportunity that you have to put some real focus into habit changes. And then for other people, you know, as we mentioned with the environment, you've got to have this liminal change. So meaning you have to have like your whole life shaken up in some way in order to create those changes. You know, you mentioned Tony Robbins being the author of one of your favorite books. That's what he does with his live events. It's a liminal event. You come in and your whole world is shaken up and you're in this position where you're ready for change. And I think the best way to help people change in that way is to, you know, I hate to use the word indoctrinate because it has negative connotations, but you essentially indoctrinate people leading up to this liminal event. So you get them familiar with some of the concepts that they'll need to know when they're in that space. You need to have that world shaking space. And then after that, there's got to be an integration period where you're figuring out, okay, you know, I don't live in that space my entire life. So how do I now integrate the lessons into what is my new normal life? And those are some of the longer term behavior change models that I'm starting to think of. And, you know, hopefully I can create enough time for myself to actually write the book that's been emerging on my longer run days.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Do you have, like, when you get a client and they have to make a major change like that, are you sending them to an event? Are you doing an event? What does that look like?
Yeah, so that's actually one of the things I've identified as being important for our business. Because whenever I'm deciding what should we do within Beyond Macros, I'm like, okay, does this make us better at being the sustainable transformation nutrition coaches? And I believe that holding some live events, whether they be a weekend or a week long, are going to be a part of our business model here very soon. Because the thing is, it's like we help people with kind of that endurance model where for about 3 to 12 months, it's like we're helping people implement changes gradually. It's incremental. We also help people from an intermittent perspective. We do have some clients who it's like they're on point for a month and then all of a sudden we don't hear from them for 2 weeks because life got crazy. And then they're like, all right, you know, I managed to focus on a few things. Those were wins. What's next? You know, so we really have kind of the incremental and the intermittent covered by our coaching. But the thing is, we don't have that really big liminal change that has that kind of indoctrination, the liminal, the big change up period, that intensive period, and then the integration period. So that's something that we're working on creating. And in 2019, it's definitely one of my big commitments is to at least hold one of those events. And, yeah, but other than that, we've got the intermittent and the incremental covered.
Sounds like you guys are doing some really awesome stuff. Really awesome stuff. Well, how do you approach the fitness side of it? If, you know, you guys, you give people the map, you work on them, you know, making the changes they need to, then are you saying like, hey, go to a CrossFit gym? Or do you, you know, how involved is that side of it?
Yeah, so most people who come to us are coming to us from a place of already doing something for their fitness. You know, most people that come to us, you know, it's your Joe at the CrossFit gym, or, you know, the guy who shows up and runs a few Spartans per season. You know, it's people who actually already have some degree of fitness routine. I actually, I find it unethical to help people lose weight, or even like people who want to gain muscle, if they're not already working out. Like, you know, fitness and exercise isn't going to be the thing that helps you lose all of the weight. It's not going to be the thing that necessarily helps you put on all of the muscle, but it's really a prerequisite. If it's not there, then, you know, if we help you lose weight, you're probably losing muscle and fat. And that's going to make it more difficult for you to maintain. We need you to be exercising and hopefully some degree of resistance exercising, so that if we're helping you lose weight, that it's, we're helping you lose fat. We're not helping you lose just weight that might include muscle. Because as I mentioned, like if we help you lose muscle, it's going to be a lot harder for you to maintain that weight that you've lost, just because you have less total daily energy expenditure. And especially for older clients, you know, anybody over 40, it's like, man or woman, your testosterone's dropping and it's going to be a lot harder for you to put that muscle that we lost back on. And, you know, I don't think that that's good for longevity whatsoever.
Do you guys have an ideal client?
Yeah, I think there's a few, and it's really somebody who's in a transition phase where they were maybe early on in life an athlete or like cared about their health, but then early in their career, they had to just grind out 12-hour days and fitness was the last thing on their mind. And maybe they had to eat, you know, fast or convenient food in order to really just survive the rigors of, you know, entry-level job in, let's say, investment banking, something like that. And then all of a sudden, it's like you've kind of hit that point of tenure in your career and you're like, oh, wow, I've actually can duck out of the office at, you know, 5 p.m. to go hit the 6 p.m. CrossFit class. And that's finally an option that's on the table. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, what other things can I do to undo the nasty stuff I did early in my career? And then there's the parents, man. There's the two transition points for a parent that we find that I really like working with people in is, you know, finally it's like the last kid that they have is like in preschool. And all of a sudden mom or dad's like the sleep's a little bit better and they're no longer in this point where it's like at all points in the day, there's a kid like, mom, mom, dad, dad. There's finally some time where you can go and get your hour in at the gym or more. And you can make some food for yourself because you're not making every single meal of the day for the kids and spouse. You know, there's actually maybe you've got some time for yourself. You can eat lunch. That's a cool space to be in. Then there's guys like my dad. You know, he's an empty nester at this point, kind of coming towards the end of his career, and he can come home for lunch and he can go to the 4:30 open gym at the CrossFit gym because he's, you know, just at that season in his life. It was tough, 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 work, 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 got kids in the house. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know, I'm in this transition phase where I've got a lot more time to focus on me. And now I'm in this headspace of, I want to live a long, healthy, and mobile life. And, you know, I think those are some of the really cool transition points where we enjoy working with people.
That's really cool. Did you figure out what those transition points were just by working with a bunch of people and that kind of like those rose to the top? Or did you have that thought process, you know, at a brainstorming session and then it actually ended up working out?
It's funny. It's actually when I started putting together like a structured coaches training course where I was thinking about who are the mock cases that I'm going to train the trainees with. I'm like, okay, who are the mock cases going to be? Who are those kind of client avatars they're most likely to see? So in reflecting on it, I just went through our, you know, clients and client alumni list. And I was like, oh, wow, there's a lot of people who kind of fit that bill. And then I do a lot of like case-based learning and then mentorship and role play with our coaches and training. So I have to go into the role of a client or a potential client. So for me, I just had to really, it's like acting, man. It's like, I really had to get in the headspace of, okay, what's it like to be that person? I've worked with that person. I know intimately the struggles that they've been dealing with, things that worked for them. So I just have to step into that role of like, you know, I have one of our cases is I'm Matt Walrath, and there's a case that's Madison Walrath. So I step into this role of like a woman who just, you know, had her first kid, and then, you know, her second kid is in preschool for the first time, and, you know, trying to deal with that. And it's funny because I have like two or three women we've worked with who I'm like, okay, I'm kind of pulling different aspects from them to channel that to the coaches. So yeah, it's kind of a funny practice for me. It's just like stepping into that role play. That's where I realized it. It's helped me as a coach too.
That's really fun. What are some of your personal fitness, life, business goals leading forward?
Yeah, so fitness goal is to get a 10 or sub 10 minute 2 mile by June 15th of 2019. So we'll see how that goes. I can get sub 5 on a mile, but to hold on to that pace seems suicidal.
Yeah.
As far as life goes, let's see. Yeah, that's an interesting one. Cause for me, it's hard to say for a year, but you know, 10 years out, I definitely want to be in a place where like I've got kids. Like in my 10-year vision, kids are involved. Okay. I've got this great vision, and you can probably relate to this, where I want to have a property in Maine, and I want to have a property down where you're at right now in the Smoky or the Blue Ridge Mountains. And I want to have like a mobile home or two that I can just move between the two. And just like take advantage of the seasons. That's definitely a big part of my vision. And I also want to, and this is a big part of the 10-year vision, is I want to have inspired people to realize how much of an impact they have on the environment. Because being a guy who's out in nature all the time, like I love nature, and I can see from being a guy who's been in the woods my whole life, the effect that we've had in my lifetime, which is crazy to me. And I've really had my eyes open to the fact that, like, you know, wasting food and the way that we eat are two of the largest contributors to, I mean, people hate the word global warming, but global warming, climate change, whatever you want to call it. You know, those are two of the biggest contributing factors, and we have the ability to actually affect those things on an individual level. So I think, in 10 years, I want to have educated people to the point where they know that they've got the personal power to affect the environment, and they know how to, in a very simple, easy way, make changes to their life where they're not having a negative impact. They're having a positive impact if possible. And that's really the 10-year life things that I can think of off the top of my head. But from a business perspective, this year, as I mentioned, I really want to create those live events where we're having that big liminal change for people who might not be able to get as much benefit out of an incremental change or an intermittent change. They really need that big shakeup. And creating that is definitely a big priority for me in 2019. And a big part of that is going to be creating the space and time to write that book as well.
I love it. So you're a big change guy. You understand nutrition. You understand, you just said it, that the environment and the place that people are at right now is not necessarily in the healthiest space. And right now our, you know, overweight and obesity population is just growing like crazy. What do you think we can do in order to try and change that as fitness, nutrition influencers?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's so simple and so difficult, because this book Drawdown, which is the subtitle of it, is like the most comprehensive solution to global warming ever produced, something like that. And it's got the 100 best solutions ranked in order of impact. And the number 3 solution would be reducing food waste. And I think the number 4 would be moving towards a plant-rich diet, which doesn't mean vegan. It doesn't mean vegetarian. The way that they actually showed it was that if we could get 50% of the population to eat under 2,500 calories per day, have less than 57 grams of protein coming from red meat, and just get 5% of the food that they're eating locally, then we would have something like, I think, 28 gigatons of carbon emissions reduced and sequestered. Yeah, something insane like that. And I think about that. And when I was thinking about it, based off of what the ratio of body weight to, you know, the coefficient for what it would take to maintain at like a light to moderate level of activity, that's 14 to 16 times your body weight in pounds. So anybody that is 178 pounds or less could thrive on under 2,500 calories per day. Could be healthy, could thrive. Now, I take those coefficients as when I, like, if we're working with an obese client, you would want that to be based off of probably their lean mass. So anybody, like, I know very few people who have more than 178 pounds of lean mass. So I really do believe that most people on this earth, vast, vast majority, we're talking like 98%+ could thrive at 2,500 calories or less. And we only would have to get it to 50% of people eating less than that just to have this massive impact on the environment. And I really think being able to help people who are obese shift their eating habits is not only going to shift the obesity epidemic, but it's also going to help improve and impact the environment. And if we start moving people towards that plant-rich diet, again, not plant-based, not that they have to be vegan, not that they have to be vegetarian, not that they can't eat their meat, but just moving them towards more plant-based choices, then, you know, we can see a major impact, not only on the health outcomes of people that are in high-risk categories of obesity, but also, you know, can have this impact on the environment. And those are two things that I'm very, you know, passionate about helping to change, and it feels so good that it has a mutual solution. Now it's just a matter of like, how do we roll that out on a massive scale? And that's why it's a 10-year goal, is because, you know, there's no way I could figure that out in a year.
Matt, this has been incredible. I mean, I could just keep on, we could dig into that conversation for another 2 hours. But I know that people have other things that they needed to do, but
yeah, man. Plus it's winter, daylight. You gotta take advantage of the daylight back there.
Absolutely. Or we just keep on heading south.
Yeah.
if somebody wants to find out more about you, find out more about Beyond Macros, get started with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, man. So they can just go to beyondmacros.com. If they want to, we have a calorie macro calculator worksheet. So like I said, that's like, we'll give you the map. If you want to have a guide on the journey, you know, that's what we do. But if they go to beyondmacros.com/worksheet, they can download that calorie and macro calculator worksheet. You know, we also send some follow-up emails with recipes, things of that nature to help them along. And if they stick around on that email list for a few emails, they also get an invitation to our free community where we chat about people's challenges and things of that nature. It's a pretty thriving community. So I think that's the best way to get involved with Beyond Macros, as well as the Beyond Macros podcast, which All I'm right. hopefully going to have you on here pretty soon. You know, the podcast is short episodes, generally no more than 30 minutes, usually on average in that 15 to 25 minute range. We focus on one topic, and the goal is to be, if anyone listens to Planet Money, the Planet Money of fitness. So really just telling a good story. You know, it's a little bit different than the interview format that people are listening to right now, but I think they'll like it. I try to keep it entertaining, and I'll be doing more voice acting.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it all sounds really cool. And if anybody is driving or whatnot and they need to get to these show notes, they're at allaroundjoe.com/172. And Matt, man, thanks again. This has been awesome.
My pleasure, dude.
Yeah, dude. Let's talk again soon.
Yeah, we will.
All right. Take care.
Hey guys, that was my podcast with Matt Walrath. As you can see now, I'm back in the van. I got a little bit chilly out there during that podcast interview, but it was super pretty. Make sure that you check out beyondmacros.com. Go and sign up for Matt's calculator there. And if you found what he had to say interesting, try and get involved with him. I mean, he's a super cool guy doing really interesting stuff and trying to change the world in a positive way. So I cannot say enough about how impressed I am with Matt and his company, Beyond Macros. So head over to beyondmacros.com and get yourself started today. And like I said on the podcast, if you want to get at any of the show notes for the show, they're at allaroundjoe.com/172. That's allaroundjoe.com/172. And this podcast is brought to you by thegetbetterproject.com. So if you guys would like any programming for your fitness, whether it be in the gym, outside the gym, or kettlebell specific type stuff, head over to thegetbetterproject.com and check it out. All right. The All Around Joe podcast, where we optimize your human performance from my personal experience as an athlete, coach, and all around self-improvement. I will see you on the next podcast.